Splendid blessed day and a warm welcome to the Grillet Cafe brought to you by Frontinus Limited. Frontinus is a communications consultancy focused on engineering, infrastructure and sustainability. With you today is Angie Musa, political scientist and teaching associate at the University of Cambridge. And I'm very pleased as always to be accompanied by Mr. Anthony Haynes, creative director of Frontinus. Greetings, Mr. Anthony.
Greetings, Angie.
In our podcast, we focus on the production of different forms of grey literature. Zooming in a little bit, we dedicate this episode to one aspect of text production, which concerns the language of text. In particular, we shall examine today a phenomenon called plainism. So, Dr. Anthony, would you mind kindly starting our discussion by explaining to us what is plainism?
Yeah, sure, Inji. So, it's a type of linguistic usage. Plainism is the usage of language containing redundancy, where you use words or phrases that don't add to the meaning.
And could you give us some common examples of this phenomenon to better appreciate the issue?
Indeed, there are many very common examples. So I'll just give you a handful off the top of my head. When someone says that's an added bonus, well, a bonus is something that's added. You don't need the word added. Or when a company offers you a free gift, well, a gift is something that's free. You don't pay for gifts. It wouldn't be a gift. Or they say, she's a personal friend of mine. What other kind of friend do you have? One that's I've noticed increasingly in recent years is people say never, ever. He never, ever says that. You mean he never says it? That's what never means. One that I know I use sometimes, I'm guilty of, is in my own view. Well, who else's view is it? It's in my view. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think it was Grammarly, one of his, or maybe Microsoft Checker, one of his online things started pointing that out to me that I was using that. Mm. And one that I find a bit more subtle, but quite irritating, is when people are comparing something, A with B, and they say they're both the same. And you think, well, it would be both of them, wouldn't you? Wouldn't it? Like, you couldn't have one of them being the same and the other one not being the same, because then they wouldn't be the same. So those are half a dozen or so, very common plainism.
Oh my God, this is very harsh, Professor. But so looking at these examples and other ones that are maybe more recurrent for some of us than others, would you say that there are like various types of plainism? In other words, can these examples, among others, be categorized then?
Well, I don't know of any formal taxonomy. I mean, it's possibly that someone, you know, some researcher in linguistics has done this, but I don't know of any formal taxonomy. But working as an editor, I reckon there are, you know, a handful of common types.
Okay, so shall you kindly take us through like them one at a time, please? So let's see what's the first then.
Okay, well, a common one is to do with abbreviations. Mm. So when someone says, "Can I have your PIN number?" they mean, can I have your personal identification number? Uh-huh. Or if you're investing money, at least in the UK, and they say, why don't you open an ISA account? That's an individual savings account. And here's another one that I know I've done. If you say, why don't you put it in PDF format? The F in PDF stands for format already. So abbreviations commonly bring out pleonasms.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And what about the second then?
The second one, pleonasm seems to be attracted to language to do with the sequencing of actions, the sort of temporal ordering. An example is forward planning.
Okay.
So, you know, you wouldn't do backward planning. If you could plan backwards, it would be much more accurate because you could do it with hindsight, but actually that wouldn't be planning anymore. So that's what I mean by the sequencing. And so this happens a lot with prefixes. Mm. If you're going for a meal, you say, why don't we pre-book with a restaurant? Well, you mean book a table. If you say, this speech is pre-planned, well, it would be, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be post-planned. That's rather like the forward planning thing. And then one that I'm hearing increasingly, and it sort of jars with me, is this is pre-prepared. You mean it's prepared. And For some reason these days, when people want you to confirm things, they ask you to reconfirm things. And then there are also, so it's partly to do with prefixes, and the other way in which this sort of sequencing or temporal order comes out is to do with prepositions, people putting in prepositions like, would you like me to repeat it again? To which I'd say, no, it's all right, just repeat it. Or shall I report back from the conference? No, you could just report from the conference, that's okay, because report means carry back anyway, that's what the RE bit in the phrase report tells you, is carrying it back. Or if you talk about a building falling down, you say, or being knocked down, you say it's raised to the ground. Well, it couldn't be raised to the sky, because the word raise, R-A-Z-E, actually means reduced to ground level anyway.
Interesting. Okay. Before we move to the third category, I just have a tiny question, particularly kind of using examples like reconfirm or... Yeah, for maybe starting with reconfirm, would you say that that's kind of a word, like a false word, or is it more like that the people are misusing it?
Well, technically, there is a need for the word, because I suppose they might ask you to confirm something, and then they might ask you to do it all over again for some reason, and then it would be reconfirmed. So I don't think we can actually kind of prohibit the word itself. It's more the fact that, you know, the same as repeat again. Maybe you've repeated it once again, so it would be repeating it again. It's more the fact that people are just clumsily using, you know, repeat again just to mean repeat.
Okay.
That's
so to make some people at least feel better, once some people actually use it correctly, right? So if they have to repeat twice, then that means that they are repeating again for the second time. Okay.
Indeed.
Okay,
indeed.
Cool.
Yes.
I hope someone will feel better, including myself now. Okay, so what about the third category of plainism then?
These are to do with adverbs. So when someone says he's not currently available, well, the present tense, he is not, tells you it's now, he's not available. So what does the word currently add? I mean, you can't say he was currently available. I mean, it's obviously in the present tense, he's currently available or currently unavailable. Actively, when people say I'm actively searching for jobs, what would a passive search look like? I mean, I think searching is taking an action, isn't it? So I don't know the difference. And then I think a similar one is when people say it's completely unique, because at least in traditional standard English, unique means it's one of a kind, that there's nothing else of its sort. So you can't be a bit unique. You know, you're either unique or you're not unique. So completely doesn't really add anything. I would say there, I think the usage is changing, because unique always used to mean in traditional standard English, one of a kind, you know, only one of a kind. And I think now it's coming to mean something more like distinctive or unusual. And as that word changes in meaning, the more you actually have to put the word completely in.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the last point, this is very powerful. I'm not sure how many of us are consciously doing, like, using the word because of this difference of meaning.
Yes.
But again, I will give it to the people and try to think that they do that with intention. So... again, they are justified. Okay, any more types or categories of plainism we could entertain today?
I've got one category which I call dispersed plainism. I mean, most of the examples I gave you, especially at the start, were very simple ones where you can just knock out one word. Like, instead of saying added bonus, you just say bonus, right? But some of them are a bit more subtle than that. They're dispersed across the syntax. And so I would say an example is when someone says, can I ask a question? Well, we just have asked a question. So actually putting that sentence in, can I ask a question, doesn't really add anything. You should just ask the question. Some people might disagree with that example. And also the way people use phrases or terms such as including and for example and etc. So as we're recording this, the Football World Cup has just finished, okay? And I could say a number of teams played very well, including Argentina, France and Morocco. And that makes perfect sense. And when I say a number of teams played very well, including, I don't mean Argentina, France and Morocco were the only teams that played well. I mean amongst the teams that played well are those three, but there might be others. But what people now do is they say a number of teams played well, including France, Argentina and Morocco, etc. And the word etc., you know, Latin et cetera, means and others. But that's what the word including tells us in the first place, that there could be others. So it doesn't add anything. Or when people say a number of teams played well in the World Cup, including, for example, well, that's what the word including is doing. The word including is telling us, I'm going to give you some examples now. So what do you add to the meaning by saying, for example?
Interesting. Okay. Going a little bit back, like, what would you use instead of, can I ask a question?
Just ask the question you're going to ask. Like, if you say, can I ask a question? And what you really want to say is, could we close the window, please? It's a bit cold. You say, could we close the window, please? It's a bit cold.
Would you say that sometimes people do that out of courtesy? Would you still blame them?
Yes. Well, that's why I say some people might disagree with me on that one. Personally, I think all it does is create a bit of fuss and delay things. So okay. Just get on with it. But maybe that's my stylistic preference.
Okay. On a side note, can I say that that's the outcome of us just recording a few episodes on productivity and you are kind of very keen on saving times at the moment?
Yes. Yes, because it's often in meetings, isn't it? It's like, can I ask a question? And there are six people sitting around listening to you say, can I ask a question? So get on with it.
Okay. Cool. So,
but I agree. I mean, it's difficult with some of these to draw a line between what's sort of unarguable and what is to do with one's own personal preference.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. And so, being now aware of these various types or categories of plainism, allow me to zoom out a little bit and ask, why should we be concerned about plainism? So, like, in other words, why does plainism matter?
Well, I'm not claiming it's the most important thing in the world. And actually, usually when I encounter it and comment on it, it's more a kind of entertainment value. Like, people find these things quite funny, really, rather than it being a matter of grave concern. Mm. But there are a couple of reasons why it matters to some extent. One is simply you're wasting words.
Mm-hmm.
And with many types of writing and speaking, we value concision. You know, I do a lot of work in engineering, for instance, on, you know, professional and commercial and scientific documents. And generally speaking, in that type of writing, people value concision. So if we can lop some wasted words out, that's great. And in particular, often people have a problem with word count. You know, they have to write something like a summary of a bid or something, or an abstract of a paper, and they're given a word limit, 150 words or whatever. Well, you don't want to waste any of those words on unnecessary words. So there, it does actually have a practical import. I think the other reason why it matters is it's more like a symbol. In other words, the plainism isn't a symptom. Sorry. In other words, the plainism isn't so much causing a problem as indicating as a problem. And that problem is that you're asleep, that you're not really being vigilant about your language. You're not really thinking about what you're saying very much. And therefore, when you catch yourself using pleonasm, say you're looking at a draft you've written and it's got a number of pleonasms in, that's often an indication that you're not at your best. And when you're reading someone else and they're using a lot of pleonasms, you have to kind of start asking yourself, how carefully is this person actually thinking? And it might make you sit up a bit and look a bit more critically at what they're arguing.
Okay, well, so to be fair, these are like certainly two valid reasons for which creator of grey literature should be concerned about plainism. But I wonder whether plainism should always be considered as a bad thing, I guess. So should it? What do you think?
No, I don't think it should always be considered a bad thing. I think there are various defences, if you like. One is emphasis. Mm. So I gave the word currently earlier. Most of the time it's just a pleonasm, but when you say he's not currently available, it may be what you're saying is, well, just at the moment, you know, he's just on another call or something, but in a moment he'd become available.
Mm.
Or he's not currently, at this precise moment he's not available, but usually he is. It's that kind of thing. So I think it can be used for emphasis. I think that works better in conversation, where you can use your voice. You know, he's not currently available, but your tone of voice can indicate why you're using the word. I think it's valid to use the emphasis defense. I don't particularly like the defense because people start using that defense all the time. Like, oh, I was just using it for emphasis. Yeah, but actually Reconfirm doesn't need any emphasis, does it? Reconfirm doesn't add useful emphasis to that. So I think people use it as a let-out clause a bit. I think the second justification is when you're it's for explication. It's sort of spelling something out a bit. And I think that can be useful when you think your audience might not catch your meaning. So, for instance, it may be you're speaking in English and the person you're speaking to is actually not very good at English. So actually putting in I've just done it there, the word actually, which I've just used, is usually a pleonasm. But actually it just helps them out a bit if you put in a few redundant phrases. So it can help just make things a little bit clearer for your audience. And then I think the one that interests me a lot is it can be expressive. In other words, it can be used in literature or songwriting or something of that kind to convey a feeling. And my favourite example is a very famous poem from the 18th century by Thomas Gray called Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. And I think it's a wonderful piece of writing, actually. And it begins like this. The curfew tolls the knell of parting day. The lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. The ploughman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness and to me. Now fades the glimmering landscape on the sight, and all the air a solemn stillness holds. And when you read those lines, they feel pleonastic. It feels like there are certain ideas that are being said more than once. It's actually quite difficult to pinpoint exactly where the pleonasm comes. But I'll give you an example. The lowing herd winds slowly over the lea. Well, what he's talking about is a cattle walking, you know, in the path of a curve over some grass. And you think, well, wind, well, that has to be done slowly. You can't have cattle winding manically. That wouldn't be winding then. It would be something else. Galloping, if cattle can gallop, I don't know. When it says the ploughman homeward plods his weary way, somehow plod and weary, he wouldn't plod his energetic way, you know, or he wouldn't sprint wearily. That's not what you do when you're weary. And the curfew tolls the knell of parting day. Somehow you know it's the end of the day. There's more than one word that's telling you that day is coming to an end there. And so I think there's a degree of pleonasm in that, but I wouldn't take it out. Because I think actually it's like the language is capturing, the language is enacting the feeling that Thomas Gray is trying to convey. So I actually think it's rather expressive, articulate writing.
Interesting. Okay, so there are three justifications so far. So we have emphasis, we have explanation, and we have expressiveness. And I really like the part of the body language note that you made on emphasis. I think this is very important, since if we are going to say that it might take us a while to kind of get over pleonasm, then at least we could make it seem as if it's intentionally there rather than just pleonasm. So like, to be fair, like these are actually some good things about pleonasm after all. So such a relief for some of us who might not be up to admit their laziness yet.
Well, I'll tell you what, Inji, this business of making things clearer, I actually deliberately put in a pleonasm earlier on, okay? So you said to me, what is a pleonasm? And I said, it's a use of language containing redundancy. And then I said, it's where words or phrases don't add to meaning. Well, I've just said the same thing twice, haven't I? But that actually, you know, someone listening to a podcast, they might be doing the ironing or driving a car or whatever, they're not necessarily listening that carefully. So actually saying things paraphrasing might not be such a bad thing.
Absolutely, yeah. So aside from the joke I just said, and like maybe on a more serious note, really, and as one, I just said really, which I think is plainism, but I will let it go. And as one, yeah, try to reflect on your previous points and hopefully act upon them seriously. So why do you think it is helpful for speakers and or writers to know about plainism?
Well, I think it is helpful in editing. Mm. So whether you're editing someone else's book or your own style, I think it is helpful to notice these things and knock them out, because I think it just makes your writing feel a bit more succinct and a bit more intelligent. Mm. The second reason why it helps is actually my favourite reason, which is provided it's done in a light-hearted way. I think it's amusing, and it's a kind of, I'm going to use the phrase one-up personship. It's possible I'm the first person ever to use that phrase, so I'll explain what I mean by that. And that's I've just done a form of one-up personship. We have a traditional phrase in English, which is one-upmanship, which is where you do something in order to sort of gain the upper hand and position yourself as in some way superior to the person you're with or the person you're talking to. And obviously, that's a traditional phrase, but one-upmanship is arguably sexist, so I now call it one-up-personship. But it's when you do something just to gain the upper hand on people. And as I say, I think this is perfectly permissible as long as you do it in a kind of gently humorous way. So when people say something like it's an added bonus, if you then say, well, I've noticed that, you know, a lot of bonuses seem to be added. In fact, I can't actually think of a bonus that isn't added. As long as you do that in a, you've got the right kind of relationship and you're doing it a jovial way, I think that's amusing. I find that when someone points out a pleonasm that I'm using by mistake, I have to laugh at myself. I mean, it's pretty difficult. When you say they're both the same, and I say, well, I suppose you couldn't really have one the same and one not the same, you kind of have to laugh at yourself. You can't really defend that, really. It's difficult to take offence and say, I demand the right to say that they are both the same and that this gift is free.
Yeah. To be honest, maybe kind of just to conclude, one of the things that I got out of this episode, like, which is quite funny, to be honest, is there is, like, maybe it's because of your job as an editor and as someone who is very engaged with reading and creating of great literature, but there is a level of relationship between us as creator of content and the words that we use. So it's not only, it's not something mechanical, but it's actually, like, there is an embedded relationship between you and the words that you are using. And I truly felt it in this episode when you're picking all these different examples and how you perceive them. So yeah, any final notes you wish to share with us?
Well, I'll give you one more tip, Inji. If you want to exercise some one-up personship, I would say it's useful to know the concept of pleonasm, because you can point out, you know, that we don't need to do any forward planning, we can just do some planning. But it's also useful to know the word pleonasm, because very few people know it. And then you can, when someone says we need to do some forward planning, you can say, well, I think that's a pleonasm, really, isn't it? And everyone looks at you, they haven't a clue what you're talking about. And then you can say, we don't really need to forward plan, we could just plan. And then look very smug.
I'm not sure I will give that a try very soon. I would rather tilt on that side of cautious and humbleness. But it sounds funny, and I might entertain it one day, to be honest. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Anthony, for such an insightful and very, very interesting episode indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Inji. Thank you.
This was Inji Musa with Anthony Haynes. Greylat Cafe is edited by Dr. Bart Holmark and produced by Frontinus Limited. Frontinus specializes in grey literature forms such as proposals, publications, papers, and reports. Frontinus helps creators of grey literature to achieve high-quality professional outputs and to be more productive. To discuss your grey literature needs and to see how Frontinus can help, you can contact Frontinus via their website, frontinus.org.uk. There is a link in the show notes. The music is from Handel's Water Music, courtesy of the United States Marine Band and Marine Chamber Orchestra.